Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. Now, all of chemistry is dependent on the interaction of electrons on the outside of atoms. But the electron has also become increasingly central to our lives. If you know nothing about the electron, well, shame on you. But here, once again, is friend of the show, our expert who basically puts science on a blank page. And ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys and whatever, if you're looking for a blank page, I am it. Delighted to say that Brian's back. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning or afternoon.
Or afternoon, whatever time zone we're in. We could talk about the time-space continuum, but let's not go there because I think I've got my hands full of electrons at the moment. Brian, please, for those who haven't heard you before, just explain a little bit about yourself and why you're so eminently qualified to write about the electron.
Okay, so I'm a science writer. I've been doing this for about 25 years. I had a background in physics, that kind of stuff, but I'm much more interested in just making science accessible. And I thought the electron deserved to have a biography of its own. There are too many boring celebrity biographies out there. It's time something really important had a biography.
Well, you put it like that. I'm enthralled. So come on then. You're looking at somebody who did dismally at science at school. Obviously, I'm a humanities person, apparently. So what is an electron? Is it that sort of squiggly bit that looks like an atom? Explain the difference, please, Brian. Come on, let's talk to the unconverted or just the hopeless.
Okay, so electrons, fundamental particles, they've been around, most of them, since the Big Bang. So they're about 13.8 billion years old. Most of them, your body has billions of billions of them in it. Basically, every atom has electrons on the outside, but it's also what does electricity. Electricity is just electrons moving around. So any electronics, anything electrical, anything in chemistry, all that stuff, just our very existence is based on these little particles. And obviously, it's only relatively recently we've known what they are and what they're going on about, but we've been aware of the stuff they do, like lightning, you know, for thousands of years. So it's something that has always had an influence on us, but now we use every day. I couldn't talk to you now if it weren't for electrons being involved.
So are they the sort of, the atom is the power unit and the electron is the conductor, or how are we looking at that in basic terms?
Okay, so there's two separate, electrons doing two separate things. Right. So electricity, they're just on their own. You imagine a sort of wires a bit like a pipe with electrons flowing down it. That's how electricity works. Or, you know, when you get the lightning bolt, there's vast numbers of electrons zooming around the place. On an atom, they're broadly on the outside of the atom. Because chemistry is all about atoms interacting with each other on the outside, it's the electrons that do that interacting. So, you know, anything involving chemistry, the very nature of atoms themselves, electrons are in there. And just things like, every time you breathe in, you're breathing in maybe about 10 billion trillion electrons, which is the equivalent of quite a lot of lightning bolts in electrical charge. But luckily, atoms are electrically neutral. So you've got these negative electrons, you've got positive bits in the middle, and it all balances out. Otherwise, you'd be fried every time you breathed, wouldn't be a great
idea. Not only that, I'm thinking of sneezing and sending two thunderbolts as a Thor across the living room.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you write about that? I mean, how do you write about the history of the electron? Because, I mean, this is, you know, can you say electrons were there at the beginning of time. They were very important in the building of the pyramids. I mean, how do you put this in a convincing narrative, Brian?
Well, I think that, like most good biographies, really, the narrative is about how they interact with people and people interact with them. So it's really a matter of looking back through history when people have been trying to understand what's going on. You know, I suppose there's a story some people have come across, like Benjamin Franklin allegedly flying a kite in a thunderstorm to see what happens with electrical charge, that sort of thing. And to start with, people really hadn't much of a clue. In fact, electricity was really an entertainment because they didn't realise what was going on. There's this wonderful thing back in the 18th century called the electrical boy, where they basically hung a boy from bits of silk, sort of charged up one end of him and got shocks from the other end of him. In fact, I love the description because it basically says that we took a boy between 8 and 9, weighing 47 pounds, 10 ounces with his clothes on. This is in 1748.
Right.
And did it go with him. And that initially, electricity, you know, it was mostly a bit of a show. Then they started wondering, ooh, has this got anything to do with the life force?
After they frazzled a few preteens, that was obviously.
Yeah, and monks, actually. There's one guy who basically lined up about 100 monks in a row, electrified them from holding hands, and watched them sort of jump along the row of monks, because it was kind of handy. Oh,
this is the gift that keeps on giving, Brian. Continue.
I know. And obviously, you know, as I say, people start to think about electricity and life, and you get, you know, sort of mentions in Frankenstein, but we get this guy, Galvani, who basically stuck an electrical charge into a frog's leg and it twitched. So they're starting to think, oh, there's something in the body that involves electricity, because our body runs on electricity as communication means. The more interesting bit in some ways, his nephew, Calvani's nephew, is called Aldini. He brought a show to the UK in 1803, where he basically electrified a corpse and made it sort of twitch. Ooh. In front of everybody. And the story I love is this sort of write-up in the local paper where it says, Mr. Pass the Beadle died of fright soon after he returned home. So it was clearly quite a shocking experience.
So we know there's something out there because there's frog's legs and people being jolted upright and, you know, but... fried monks. That's my story of the day thus far. So when does somebody sort of look at this properly and think, hang on, there's more to this than just a freak show, a sideshow, you know, and something to keep the clergy occupied with?
I guess one of the big names that most people have heard of is Michael Faraday. And he was one of the first, didn't know what electricity was, that came a bit later, but was able to play around with it and get the idea of being able to generate it and also to move things with it. So he came up basically with the first generator, with the first real motor for using electricity. And it's said that Robert Peel, then the Prime Minister, asked him what use it was. And Faraday said, I don't know, but I think one day your government's going to tax it. Fair enough.
Yeah, very good indeed. Very good indeed. I mean, do we know, I'm a medievalist, sorry. So therefore, it's all the humours with me, you know, it's all equal parts and there's leeches involved. So in most things, when in doubt, throw a leech on it. But presumably they know that it's some sort of force, but when did they actually come up with the theory of the atom, the electron? Because obviously you can't say, oh, I just saw an electron zoom past, you know, as that frog's leg twitched. So when can they break it down? Is this a theory that is proved, or is it, I mean, explain to me again, because I'm a blank page, Brian. Yeah.
Okay, so second half of the 19th century, they were starting to make use of it. So say things like motors, first thing really was electrical telegraph, so Morse and all that kind of stuff. Then they got onto electrical lighting. They still didn't know what it was really at this point. And it's really only towards right at the end of the 20th century, a guy called J.J. Thompson at Cambridge came up with the idea that electricity was made up of these tiny little particles. He called them corpuscles, that were kind of flowing around and carrying this electricity around. And obviously it took time. They had to do various experiments to work out what was going on. But really by about 1911, something like that, it was when they first really could establish these electron things really were there, by measuring basically how they interacted with things.
And presumably by every time there was a thunderstorm and lightning, they thought, oh, hang on, that's nature's version of this. So what we've got to see is how we can put this in a laboratory, presumably, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, that's what goes back to this thing about Franklin and the kite. I mean, up to that point, there was electricity, as it were, in the sense that the most familiar form of it was if you rubbed something, you know, if you rub a balloon on your hair, you get that electrical charge that means it'll pick stuff up. And that was originally done with amber. In fact, the ancient Greek word for amber was electron. It's where the word comes from. It was from amber because it was something you rubbed and it got that kind of electrical charge. But it was Franklin really who put them together and said, this is the same thing as what's going on up there in the sky. And that was what he was demonstrating with this kite experiment. That was 18th century, but it was only really in the 20th century that we started being able to really do stuff with it. And then we got into electronics and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and of course, then it sort of really takes off because we go to, you know, the phone systems, information systems. Let's take a huge leap from the 20s and you tend to, from the telegraph through radio, through telephone systems, through to the information superhighway, basically, Brian.
Yeah, and that really started with the electrical telegraph. In fact, in some ways, it almost was better than some stuff we've got today, because the first telegraph link in Britain they set up was between London and Windsor. Well, actually, it was London and Slough, because Windsor didn't have a railway station. It was easy to go down railway lines.
Right.
And when the Queen Victoria's second son was born in 1844, the Times newspaper was on the street in London 40 minutes after the announcement. I'd like to see him do that today.
Right.
Oh, it had come down the wires, down the, you know, cable as electrons. Same thing was used a few years later to catch a murderer, because basically in those days, if you ran away at high speed, you were much faster than the information. But unfortunately, this murderer was travelling from Slough to London to get away, and they sent a telegraph message ahead of him, and he was caught at Paddington when he turned up. So, you know, it transformed the speed of communication back then, and now, of course, it's transforming everything around us.
And are we? And of course, it's every aspect of our lives. But I mean, those we recognise a sort of symbol for electron. But in terms of, you know, power, there's electric power, and then of course we have fusion and fission, don't we?
Yeah. So I mean, that's in terms of generation. That's really more about the nuclear stuff. With electrons, the nucleus is the middle bit of the atom. Electrons the outside.
Maybe,
so
yeah.
A little separate on that. Yeah.
So what do you? I mean, what are you trying to? Are you, is this basically what you know? What are there still? Do we still know what the electron is, or are there, because we keep finding bits of the human brain, if you pardon the expression, that we don't know what to do with it. And science, you know, we don't know an awful lot about the universe. So does the electron still have some secrets? Do we think that it's to give up?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, that's probably the biggest mystery about it, is we don't know how big it is. In fact, some scientists think it's literally has no size at all,
right?
Which is a bit mind-boggling. We know it's very, very small. You know, we've got measurements down to a certain scale. It's much smaller than anything else that we use. But what we don't know is how big it is, and that's one that's involved. The other things people aren't totally sure about, for instance, how long they're going to last. You know, there's been calculations that suggest it could last maybe a billion times as long as it's been around so far. And it's been around 13.8 billion years. So
right.
I don't think we have to worry about electrons decaying too much and going away. Knowing an exact figure for that is obviously pretty unlikely.
So with electrons, I mean, is it a constant number, do we think? Or do they multiply? Or can you divide electrons? Can you split the electron, for example?
Nope, they're totally fundamental. There is no way of splitting them. They just are. Almost all of them have been around since the Big Bang. So pretty well all the electrons in your body were created about 13.8 billion years ago. But there's a few that do happen. When you get nuclear reactions happening, sometimes you get an electron basically coming out of the nucleus that's newly formed. So a few of them will be relatively modern that have come out of a nuclear reaction. But the rest have been around for the whole lifetime of the universe.
Mind officially blown there, Brian. Okay, I'm just thinking. So if everything is made up of here we go. This you can see the cogs going around here, Brian, so look carefully, okay? So if everything is made up of electrons, yeah, we're in there. And there are a finite, we think there are a finite, give or take a few bits of nuclear whatever, then everything in the universe is basically an unchanging number of electrons. Are we saying that?
Yeah, essentially, because well, that's not totally fair. There is a way to destroy them.
Right.
So basically, there's a thing called an anti-electron, sometimes called a positron, which is basically exactly the same as electron, but it's the opposite electrical charge. You know, electricity got negative and positive. Electrons are negative. Positrons are the positive equivalent. If you bring the two together, they annihilate. So they totally disappear. The matter disappears and it produces basically light, but a lot of energy, because there's an awful lot of energy in matter. And at CERN in Geneva, for instance, they yes. produce a very small amount of it a year of this antimatter stuff. It does exist. It sounds science fiction, but it's real. But it's very hard to produce. And in fact, there was a Dan Brown book, I think, called Angels and Demons.
That
involved antimatter.
Yes.
And frankly, that stuff, the stuff in there was way beyond anything that's realistic.
It also had the Illuminati in it. And let's not even go there, to be honest with you.
Not quite.
What? Okay. Here's the thing. In the notes, it says, all its quantum subtlety. Now, I like this expression. I don't know what it means. I've heard quantum, but I'm not sure that means that. So what is quantum subtlety, apart from a great name for a band, Brian?
I wouldn't be bad with it. So basically, all the small stuff, atoms, electrons, photons of light, they're all what's known as quantum particles, and they just don't behave like normal stuff. So the way they move around, you know, you often see electrons pictured as going around atoms a bit like planets going around the sun. It's not like that at all. Basically, they exist in a sort of fuzzy cloud of probability. Until they interact with anything, you haven't a clue where they are, because they're literally all there is of probability. And so quantum stuff is really interesting. It's absolutely essential we understand it as engineers, certainly, because all electronics is quantum. It uses quantum phenomena. You know, every time you use a memory stick, say, it's using a special quantum property of the electrons in it and that kind of thing. But it's fairly heavy-duty physics compared with the stuff we probably did at school. But it is fascinating, just because they have this weird sort of there, sort of not there existence until they interact with something else.
You sound like you described myself. I'm obviously a quantum I'm obviously a quantum radio presenter. We're not actually sure what he's up to. It's quite fuzzy, but it sort of turns up at the right moment.
Absolutely. I mean, the most famous quantum thing, I guess, is Schrodinger's cat, this idea of something that is both alive and dead at the same time, and that might apply to radio presenters as well, I guess.
Depending on how much caffeine I've had in the morning, Brian.
Exactly.
What are you hoping that people will find or learn or discover? I mean, I'm enthralled. I mean, I came in looking like an 18th century, something from a Bruegel painting. So therefore, but now I'm quite enthralled. Are you hoping to sort of stir the uninitiated into the world of the electron and indeed even quantum baby?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, that something is so central to everything we do, especially because of all the electronic stuff we use these days, and we know nothing about it. You know, I was speaking to somebody the other day, and she said, you know, I don't really know what electricity is. I haven't a clue. It doesn't fall out of the wall, as far as I'm concerned, out of the plug hole, and that's about all I know. And it's a shame, in a way. I'm not expecting people to become scientific experts. My job really is to try to explain science to people who aren't normally involved with science. But I think it is really interesting, you know, all this history, all this weird things that have gone on in the past, trying to discover what this is, as well as just the practicality of us using it every day.
The book is called The Electron, A Biography. It's by the great Brian Clegg, who's speaking to you today. If people want to find you online via the electron-driven internet, where's the best place to track you down and say lovely things to you?
That's my website, which is brianclegg.net. So BRIANCLEWG.net.
And as always, you can order the book via our own virtual bookstore. There's a I do like the front cover on this one. The book is called The Electron. It's by friend of the show, Brian Clegg. Brian, once again, thank you for illuminating me on this afternoon's show.
Thanks for having me.